Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Hey everybody, what's going on? Jason Cutter here. Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion live mode, live show. It's so fun. I love this mode, especially when there's technical issues seconds before I'm getting in. And literally, I don't know if I'm going to have a camera or a mic or anything. And then it's live. And then here we are. So if you haven't done that before, it's quite an interesting experience. This week, I am super excited. I posted this morning. I have Kwame Christian, who I feel like has become a friend. I was on your show. You were on my show. We've talked many times. I support a lot of the stuff that you do. And so I am super excited and thankful that you're here, because I know you just have a ton of stuff going on. For the, I don't know, three people in my audience who might not know who you are, tell people who you are, what you do. And the thing that shocked me is there's a thing called the American Negotiation Institute, which I never would have guessed. So.
Yes. So thank you. Appreciate it. Glad to see you again, my friend. So yes, my name is Kwame Christian. I'm the director of the American Negotiation Institute, where we conduct negotiation and conflict resolution trainings that make your difficult conversations easier. I'm a business lawyer by trade. I still practice because I want to make sure that I'm not I'm keeping my skills sharp. So I'm an attorney at Carlisle, Patchen and Murphy. So I do business law there. And I'm also a professor at Ohio State's Law School and at Otterbein's MBA program. So doing a lot, staying busy, and really enjoying what I'm doing.
Which is why I said I am thankful and I appreciate that you're here, because I know you have a lot going on. And to carve out some time to chat about authentic persuasion, negotiation, sales, I love it. I'm curious, because I knew that you still practiced, but I didn't know it was that active for you. How much of your time, how much time a week, or what ratio would you say does that fit in, the actual practicing and still being in the trenches?
I would say it's about 80-20 in terms of American Negotiation Institute. That's the majority of the time. And then the remainder of the time is spent doing professor work and practicing and whatnot. So I want to make sure that I'm limiting everything else, so I can focus on what is most important to me and the audience, which is the American Negotiation Institute. But these other things are great for getting more exposure, helping more people, and keeping the skills sharp. And the folks at Carlisle, Patchen and Murphy are really, really great. I enjoy working with them too.
The reason why I asked, because I love that you talked about this. It's one of the things that happens for, let's say, sales leaders, is a lot of times maybe they started at the bottom, they moved their way up, right? Started out as a salesperson, became a team lead, sales manager. And then at a certain point, they've kind of evolved and gotten away from the front lines and sometimes lost touch with what it actually takes to sell, especially, I don't know, when things change in the world or in situations, sometimes just marketing, sometimes pandemic, like whatever extreme you want to go to. But where things change and that leader still is thinking about what it used to be like when they used to sell versus like what it is now. And so I love and appreciate the fact that you're still wanting to be in touch, still wanting to stay sharp on those things.
Yeah, definitely. And really, you can attest to this as a podcaster and an author too. It's story collection too. I can't have all my stories ending at a certain point in my career and then never collecting new stories.
So it's true.
By getting in there and still practicing, I get to update my stories every once in a while.
And I'll tell you, I do my best to do that as well when I'm working with clients or in any situation I can, which is to stay sharp and then also make sure it's relevant too, right? Like, you know, had a client where I went with them to trade shows and was selling from their booth and helping their team sell more effectively from the trade show booth. And it wasn't something I'd ever really done before. And that was, you know, last year when I did that. And it was like, okay, this is what it takes. This is really what it takes. And it's also nice too, because it's some validation, right? I'm sure, which is, yeah, I actually know what I'm talking about. It still actually applies.
Exactly. And I mean, talk about validation, but I mean, just the amount of respect that you got from your client for doing that. I mean, that's incredible. Because we're surrounded by thought leaders every day, and we know just when you have a reputation to uphold, putting that in practice in front of people can be really scary. It's like, oh wow, you're the sales guy. Well, show me something, right?
Yeah.
So kudos to you. I know that wasn't easy, but I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, luckily it's something I enjoy and it's fun. And I know how to be effective in a sales situation without having to master everything about that, right? Especially if I'm going to start the conversations and help somebody finish it. But I even have a client right now who the reason he's working with me is because I will do whatever it takes. Like when we get to the point of writing a new script, I will get on the phone and test it before I give it to anyone else, right? I'm going to test the medication myself before I give it to anybody else to make sure it works. And so because he's tried to hire other people, and he even asked somebody, he's like, okay, write me a script. They're like, okay, great. It's like, well, then are you going to test it? It's like, no, I don't do that. I just write scripts. It's like, okay, well then, yeah, that's not going to work because I want to know that it works. I'm willing to pay you to know it works, but you know, you want that practitioner. And I think sales teams really appreciate that too. When I, you know, go in, just like you do, when you go in and you're telling someone how to negotiate and you're just like, or working with a team, you're like, here, I'll show you, bring me in that meeting. And let me add them, right?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So speaking of podcasts, just so people watching know this, so you have a podcast, and this is why it fascinates. I love life and the fact that there's just so many different things out there. That's why when I met you, I was like, this is amazing. I didn't know there would be a thing like a negotiation podcast. I didn't know there would be an American Negotiation Institute. I don't know. I love it. And so your podcast, Negotiate Anything, amazing podcast. I love it. You've been doing it for a long time. You have tons of content, tons of shows, a great approach with it. Anything coming up with a show and or like who should listen to it? Like what's the value for people?
Yeah, well, I mean, Jason, the reason why the show's so great is because we have guests like you coming on and sharing the wisdom.
Oh, come on.
But seriously, the thing is when we have guests on, of course, they're very generous with what they know. But every once in a while, we have these episodes called practice sessions where we test each other in an unscripted negotiation, an unscripted, like back and forth, right? And you did that. Yeah. You were one of the folks brave enough to do it. We don't script it, and I try to be really difficult, and you handled it really well. And so it's been really fun to develop the content. So we've been going for 4 years. We're at we're over 2 million downloads. It's the top ranked negotiation podcast in the world, listeners in 180
awesome.
countries. And so it's been a fun journey. And so if you find yourself in a position where you need to lead, persuade, or communicate at a high level, the show's for you, because we try to get a wide diversity of guests. So you are in sales, we have relationship therapists coming on, we have people who are lawyers, people in procurement, and like all of these different disciplines coming together, sharing how you can use the skill of negotiation to make your life better. And that's really the motto that ties all of what we do together. The best things in life are on the other side of difficult conversations. And so you think about it in business. If you have these conversations at a higher level, you're closing more deals, you're negotiating and advocating for yourself, you're working more collaboratively with your team. When you bring it back home, you're having better relationships with your loved ones, with your significant other, with your children, you know. And so I just really want to open people's eyes to just how powerful negotiation can be.
I think that's fantastic. And I love that line, which you say it so smooth and effortlessly, because I know you've said it, I don't know, maybe a million times now, which is, you know, what is it? Everything you want is on the other side of difficult conversations.
Oh, the best things in life.
The best things in life are on the other side of difficult conversations. And I think that's a fantastic line. I think it's very true. And obviously that's where when I first met you and I thought about having you on my podcast, it was like, yeah, that's clearly something that would be important. Now, we do have some, I wouldn't say differing thoughts on negotiation and sales, just kind of like two ways of looking at it. But where I thought it would be fun to start is for anybody who caught last week's live episode or my podcast last week, it was really focused on leadership, sales leadership, particularly the point at which most companies make the mistake, which is promoting a top salesperson into a sales manager, sales team lead position. Not that that's always a bad thing, but generally they handle it wrong. They just assume they're going to be a good leader. They don't give them training. They don't give them any guidance. They don't give them any help. They just abdicate the leadership to them because they were good in sales, so now they're a good leader. And it just generally doesn't work. But for the sales leaders, for team leads, managers, what would you say? So they've got to lead a team. They have a team of salespeople. By default, salespeople can be challenging to lead because they're always in sales mode. One of the things, I don't know if you've ever done this or had a meeting with a salesperson, and you have to talk to them about why their performance isn't good, they will sell you on why it's not their fault, right? Why it's the leads, it's the weather, it's the taxes, it's the government, it's, you know, a flat tire, it's anybody but them, because they're always in sales mode. What would you say in a situation like that, where you're working with somebody underneath you and you want to get them to perform, you're struggling getting through, you know, what kind of advice would you have, or how would you approach that?
Yeah, it's tough. It is tough. And I've seen this in all sorts of fields too. Usually what ends up happening is you start off with a core competency and you excel in that field. And then they say, hey, you're good at this. Manage other people who are good at that. Okay, well, now management, that's a completely different skill. And so I like to keep things simple, Jason, when it comes to the approaches here. And my foundational technique for all of my difficult conversations, whether it's at work or at home, is called the Compassionate Curiosity Framework. It's from my book, Finding Confidence in Conflict. And it's three steps. Number one, acknowledge and validate emotions. Number two, get curious with compassion. And number three, joint problem solving. And so in this situation, what we're dealing with is defensiveness, right? You're dealing with somebody who is highly trained at how to communicate at a high level and persuasively, and they're mobilizing their defensiveness in an articulate way, right? And so we have to circumvent that, because for you as a leader, you have a very clear goal. You know what it is that you want to accomplish. You see the gaps in their performance and you know what you need them to do. But they're covering up their defensiveness in this really effective sales approach to try to explain to you why it's okay. So what do? We recognize that's an emotional response. It's a fear. It's an insecurity. They're not really comfortable with owning the gap in their performance. So what you do is you treat it like an emotion. You just acknowledge it and validate it. And so you say, it sounds like, or it seems like. And so you say something like, it sounds like the barrier that you're explaining, let's say taxes, let's use taxes. So it sounds like from your perspective, the taxes are really holding you back, right? Yeah, it's just really a drag. And that's why this problem is occurring. Okay, that makes sense, right? We don't need to agree. Here's an important point. When you're acknowledging emotions, acknowledgement does not mean agreement. And the thing is, if you reflexively reject that, say, listen, it's not about the taxes, then what's going to happen? They're going to push back. And I think about it kind of like the law of physics. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Same thing in these difficult conversations. Every point has an equal and opposite counterpoint. And so what we want to do is we don't want to play that back and forth game. You just say, okay, that makes sense. And now let's focus them on what can be done about it, because there is something that can be done about it, right? So that's where we get curious with compassion. All right, so understanding that the taxes are an issue, what can we do about that? How can we make this better? What can we adjust, right? So we're getting curious, gathering information, and then joint problem solving. This is a collaborative approach. Okay, so what changes can we make? Let's go back and forth and address some potential fixes so they feel as though they weren't pressured or pushed or forced into making changes. They feel as though they were part of the process. And since collaboration builds commitment, it makes it more likely for them to be bought in for the long haul.
I love it. And for anyone, you mentioned it really quick, but your book, Finding Confidence in Conflict, fantastic book. It's so great. It covers what you just talked about. And one of the big things where I take from that, especially for sales leadership and leadership at any level, is the mode that most people go into, and correct me if I'm wrong, I might be off base here, but the mode that most people go into if they think they're a leader or a manager is they go into managing and control mode, right? Like, you're not doing this. You're not making your phone calls. You're not showing up to work every day on time. Like, you're not doing this. You need to do this or else, right? They get into that, like, I'm the boss, right? I'm the parent. You're the kid. So I'm going to parent you and I'm going to control you. And my job is to be the boss. Versus a coach or somebody there who's guiding them and helping them come to the conclusion and then put something in place for their reasons that they're going to commit to that's completely independent of what I want.
Exactly. Yeah, spot on.
So I'm just thinking about how this works. So one more time, you said, because you obviously say it so much better. When somebody says, like, they come up with a reason, let's say an excuse, let's just say it's an excuse or some mm-hmm. kind of barrier, you're not telling them I'm wrong. You're not telling them, you're just acknowledging it and then trying to help them find a solution.
Exactly. Exactly. Because if you don't acknowledge it, then they're going to get fixated on this. And then the conversation becomes very unproductive very quickly. And it's not that there aren't barriers, right? These barriers could be legitimate. But the thing is, we want them to overcome. We want them to succeed despite those challenges, right? And so that's really what we want to focus people on. Okay, yes, there's a challenge, but there's also a solution.
And I think that's so important because I'm just thinking about like the teams I'm working with now where the leaders are struggling with their reps, with their agents, especially when some people are, you know, or most people are working from home and they're struggling with them to be productive, to be focused, and then, you know, struggling for them to make the most out of the conversations they're having in their sales roles. And then, you know, how do they coach that frontline person to be effective? And then obviously there's how that shows up in the sales process as well, right?
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. And we have to remember when it comes to managing and coaching, those are persuasive endeavors for sure, but they are different, right? They're different. And so we can't approach it the exact same way that we would have done closing a sale. And so these minor adjustments will pay big dividends down the road when it comes to the relationships you have with the people on your team and the changes that they're willing to make.
What do you think causes people to not be effective with this framework, with this compassionate curiosity?
I think one of the things is, it kind of goes back to what you were saying. When they're in this role, they try to focus on controlling people. Well, I'm the leader. You need to follow and do what it is that I say, right? And so, okay, Jason, you tell me, how many times have you enjoyed being controlled by somebody?
Zero.
Nobody liked that. And when people feel controlled, the natural response is to resist it. Even if it's what's best for you, they will resist it. And so what you're recognizing with the compassionate curiosity framework is that you're giving people a sense of control over the process. Yes, you are still leading the conversation, but they feel a sense of control over the process and the result, right? And when they feel that way, even though you've persuaded them, when they feel as though they had some control, when they feel as though they had autonomy, it makes them more likely to commit for the long haul, right? Because that's really what we want. If somebody says, yeah, okay, boss, I'll do it your way. Is that really a win? Are they really going to do that for the long haul? No, they're not, right? So we want them to be bought in.
Yeah, you're not going to get long-term compliance. You might get short-term, illusion of short-term compliance, but generally not long-term compliance when it's a demand, right? Versus a collaboration, as you said.
Exactly.
So one thing that comes up when I'm thinking about this is what if you're on the other end of this difficult conversation, right? On the other end. So I'm imagining I'm a salesperson. I've got a boss. And they want to be dictator, controller, micromanager, boss mode. And that doesn't work for me. I don't like that. Is there anything that could work or somebody can do from the other end to kind of switch that around or help facilitate? Or is it, you know, just pack, you know, grab your stuff and run and go find a different boss?
Yeah. So this is managing up. Right. And so I like to keep things simple, use the exact same framework. And what I would do to introduce this conversation is use a really simple framework to get the conversation started. Because, Jason, as you know, a lot of times when we have awkward conversations on the horizon, the reason why we fail is because we don't start the conversation because we don't know how to start the conversation. So I like to use this simple framework: situation, impact, and invitation. So situation, impact, invitation. So what I've noticed is blah, blah, blah. So this is the situation. You're explaining it, but what you use is what I call naked facts. So you just state the facts, stripped of commentary, stripped of judgment, to make it more likely for the person to just say, yes, that is what in fact occurred. Because if you include your judgment, people start attacking that, then the conversation doesn't even get started, right? And so the impact it had was XYZ. So you clearly explained the impact as it relates to you from your perspective. Since it's impact as it relates to you, they can't take away from that because that's completely subjective. Invitation, I'd like to have a conversation with you about this. Are you open to that? That way the person doesn't feel ambushed. They don't feel like they're forced to have a conversation. Because if they feel ambushed, it makes them more resistant through the process, even if they say, yes, let's talk. So for this example, you could say, hey, boss, one thing I've noticed is that now that we're in this situation where we're working completely remotely, you're sending more texts and more emails than you did before. And the impact that that's having on me is that I'm finding it hard to continue to work in a way that fits my typical approach. And so I wanted to have a conversation with you about it to see if we could work out some kind of communication style between us that might work better for each of us. Are you open to that? Right. And then you just use the compassionate curiosity framework within that conversation. So the boss would say, yeah, I'm trying to be more communicative because this situation is new to me. I want to make sure everybody's doing the right thing. Okay. So it sounds like for you, you just want to make sure that we are doing what we need to do in order to meet the goals. Is that right? Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. See, acknowledge and validate, right? Okay, and so from my perspective, I feel as though I can work better with a little bit less interaction day to day because I like to get into a flow state for a certain period of time and I work better in this way, whatever it happens to be, right?
Right.
And so if I'm able to hit certain numbers or hit certain metrics, would you then be willing to adjust in that type of way, right? You see how we're approaching this like a negotiation, exact same framework, but we just introduce it in a slightly different way, recognizing that there's a power dynamic. We have to be a little bit more deferential in our approach.
Yeah. And I think that's so great. And I know that for myself, I know that I have been successful at that a lot. I think that's one of the things that's made me successful in companies is managing up and helping manage the person above me, generally like an owner, because of having those conversations, not as elegant and as smooth as you, for sure. Like in no way a professional, but also not a professional salesperson. So I'm not always trying to sell or persuade or get my way with the person up above. But one of the things where I've used that before in kind of going back and forth and managing up is when you've got a lot of tasks being thrown at you and then a new task is being thrown at you and you're not sure how to prioritize it. I'll generally tell the person above me and say, here's what my priorities are. You're telling me you want me to do this, which is most important and which would you like me to do first? Instead of just taking it all on and trying to win it all, but doing that and being able to have those conversations. Some people are just afraid to even be like, you've already given me 9 things to do. Now you've given me a 10th thing to do. I can't even get the other 9 done and I don't want to get in trouble, but they don't want to say anything. So I love that framework that you have.
Thank you. Yeah. And a lot of times too, Jason, when we have those conversations, after it's done, you're like, why did I think that was going to be so bad? Right. And using the example that you gave, you've already given me this many things and now you're giving me more things. They might not notice that. I know for me, I have a staff and I mean, I wake up in the morning at 3 a.m. and I'm like, I have an idea. Email. Fall back asleep. And I remember one time, we were in the process of courting a large national donut company. I won't say the name, but a donut company. And I sent my chief operating officer an email to follow up on the account at like 3 a.m. I didn't even remember sending the email. It said, call donuts, fall asleep. She's like, Kwame, what is this? What does this mean? So a lot of times these infractions that people do, it's completely unintentional. And then you say, hey, boss, you've given me like 10 things to do. I am completely sorry. I did not realize that. Yeah, let's talk about what to do to prioritize that. Because a lot of times it's not an issue of they don't care. It's just that they're not aware. And you can help them to become more aware through the process.
And I think the key is, and this is what I've done successfully, and it fits perfectly with what you're talking about, is when I've had that conversation and managed up, which is I have these 9 tasks, you said these are super important and all due by Friday, now you're giving me a 10th thing, which is more important. I'm not saying it in a combative way. I'm not saying it in an argumentative way. I'm not saying it confrontationally. It's, here's the things I have. You want me to do this as well. Which is the priority? I'm only going to be able to get some of these done by this timeline. What do you think is the most important? And I love what you said, which is, you know, from that level, when you're leading, generally you have a lot going on. A, you have a lot of ideas. You're always answering to somebody, even if you're the director, even if you're the CEO, you're answering either to stakeholders, to shareholders, to your customers. Like, you're always, people think like, okay, once I'm the CEO, I don't have to answer to anybody. You have to answer to everybody. Like, then all of a sudden it's a totally different game. And so a lot of times people just think it's like they only think of their perspective and they think, oh, my manager's just giving me lots and lots to do. And they just keep putting all these things, emails, reports, whatever it might be. And it turns out that manager's doing a lot of things and they're not even thinking about it. They're not trying to crush you with tasks or the texts or the emails. It's just happening and they need that reset. And that's where I love, of course, your compassionate curiosity, right? It's why I use authentic persuasion, right? Curiosity is fine. But if you're a jerk about curiosity or you have the wrong intentions about curiosity, it's going to come across different, right? The compassionate side is really the key to that, that makes it, you know, separate from a conflict negotiation versus just a negotiation.
Exactly.
Okay. So one of the things, and I know we've talked about this when I was on your show, it's one of the things that we wanted to chat about. And I want to open that dialogue up here again, which is my personal stance. And then I'll turn it over to you, which I probably shouldn't because you're a professional negotiator and lawyer. So who knows what you're going to do to me, but luckily you're a nice guy. But honestly, so the way I look at it, when we're talking about salespeople, we're talking about like the in the trenches, in the sales moment. For me, I know that the common thing is that as a salesperson, you want to be really good at negotiating, right? You want to negotiate. You've got to negotiate the things that you want. For me, and what I feel is that if you're negotiating often in sales conversations, I actually think you're missing some steps and potentially doing it wrong. Because if I have to negotiate back and forth on price, it means I haven't developed a value. Now, there's things like real estate. There's going to be business stuff. There's going to be times when a negotiation is expected. And there's also times where it still doesn't need to be negotiated. And I know that we talked about that and you were interested before about like, okay, so you're saying don't negotiate. Like negotiation means you failed as a sales professional because there's some kind of conflict the customer thinks. What are your thoughts on that? You know, where does that fit into the kind of stuff that you're talking about?
Jason, this is great because I will concede to you. My views
what?
Have
hold on, all. Hold on. Let me hit the double record here. I don't want to lose this bit.
Yeah, my views have evolved. And so I've been thinking about it because I re-listened to your episode earlier this week and it made a lot of sense. And I think part of the disconnect I was having was because we're coming from different worlds, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm coming from law. Legal negotiations. I'm coming from being a practicing mediator, right? There's already an explicit conflict, right? It's yeah. built into the fabric of the interaction that we're already having. And so it's understood that that's what's going to happen. And so for me, it's like, yeah, we're going to go negotiate. That's what this is about, right?
Right.
And so for you, what's interesting is that you are setting the price. You might be saying, hey, you're the prospect. Let me try to get to you, right? And a lot of times they're coming to you because they have a specific need, but it's about a need. You have a solution and your solution has a price. And so for you, from your perspective, if there is any negotiation, it's not negotiating up. Right. So let's say you're selling something for $10,000 for you. If you're negotiating, oh, I had a good negotiation. It went up to 11,000. It's like, but how? You started off at 10,000. That's completely right. inappropriate. Who bought that? That's very strange.
Right.
And so for you, if you're negotiating, you're only going another direction and it makes yeah. a lot of sense. And so I think what we have to do when we're talking about negotiating in sales, we need to recognize that, yes, negotiation may be something that you do. But only if you need to. Only yeah. if you need to. And the problem with a lot of salespeople is that they just think about negotiation as a give and take, but more so in terms of concessions, right? Let's use the $10,000 example. All right, $10,000. All right, well, what about $9,500? Okay, what about $9,000, right? I mean, that's just, that's haggling. That's, you know, simple marketplace haggling. That's not really negotiation either. And here's the thing about a negotiation. you can negotiate and still not move your position, right? And so I think one of those things is you have to recognize, do I need to adjust? Do I need to adjust? You might not have to. Because sometimes, I mean, you've probably done this too. I know I have. I say, well, you know, I'm going to try to negotiate. I'll see if I can get a better price. I'm cool with paying this price, but I'm going to see if I can get it lower. And then the salesperson just reflexively says, sure, I can knock something off. But that's where you can use negotiation to set a better boundary, right? And so, yeah, Jason, you know, it's funny. After being on your show, you coming on my show, then me reviewing the notes of your show, it's like, you know what, man? I think Jason has a point here.
If there's one thing I know, it's that sales is full of failure. Even if you're a Hall of Fame level sales professional, you can make a great income despite losing more than you're winning. If there's one aspect of sales that most people fear and what keeps a lot of people even wanting to get into sales, it's getting hit with objections. That is why I wrote my latest book, The Sales Consultant Guide to Overcoming Objections, Yours and Theirs. This is the first in my new series of short books, guides filled with what you need for helping you improve your selling effectiveness. No fluff. No long-winded stories, no filler to make it seem more valuable, just actual foundation-building strategies to help you become aware of the true nature of why your prospects bring up objections, the different type of objections, and then specific ways to overcome them that are universal to most any sales process, product, service, or style. Go to Amazon.com today and get your copy of A Sales Consultant's Guide to Overcoming Objections. Or if you'd rather, as a gift to the listeners of this podcast, email me at jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com and I'll send you a complimentary full version of it as my thank you for listening and supporting this show.
Well, and I appreciate that truly. And I also know that that part, and I won't even say concession, but it's just two different worlds, right? It's exactly. it's what, like you said, what you're going into something that is inherently defined by conflict and negotiation, because if it wasn't, it wouldn't have gotten to that point. People exactly. like yourself as a mediator, people like yourself as a lawyer wouldn't need to be involved if it had all been agreed upon, which means there's a conflict, there's a difference of opinion, difference of position that needs to be rectified or else. And that just defines it, right? Like nobody's exactly. calling you, hey, we all agree and we just want to do mediation for fun. It looked interesting. I saw a movie once where there was mediation. Hey, we're just going to do it. And, you know, this would be fun. Let's just role play, but we're cool. No, nobody does that, right?
Right.
No, but in sales, and I love what you said because I've never thought of it that way, which is haggling. Right? Negotiation, you know, could be just a little word play, but what you're talking about is like, my price is 10,000. Can you do 8? No, I could do 9.5. Okay. Can you do 8.2? Like that's haggling, right? We're not negotiating anything. We're haggling back and forth. And I truly love that because that puts a different spin on what salespeople are taught, what salespeople think sales is supposed to include. I know that I want 10, so I need to start at 15 because mm-hmm. I'm going to negotiate and get my 10 that I want at the end of the day and make them feel, the customer, like they won as well, right? So if I say 15, I get my 10, they're happy because they feel like they won. I feel like I won and yay me, right? That's haggling. Mm-hmm. That's not negotiation. So
right.
I think that's an amazing point I hadn't thought of because it's so true. And I love that you said is that nobody negotiates up. I can't remember specific instances, but I know I've had times where I've told somebody a price and they're like, that's it. I thought it would be more. And I know my next statement has always been, okay, well, I can adjust it and I can charge you that instead. and then everyone's like, no, it's okay. We'll do that one. Right. So no one, they think it should cost more. They don't want to pay more. You already, you know, put your price. So you don't end up more like, okay, let me see if I can get more. I'm going to start at 10. And work my, it's not an auction, right? We're not bidding exactly. on something. And so that just doesn't happen.
Right. Yeah. It's a really interesting thing to think about. And I think when you think about the distinction between negotiation and haggling, it's like, the difference between squares and rectangles, right? all rectangles are squares, but not all squares are rectangles type of things. And so for negotiation and haggling, this is a negotiation. Haggling is a particular tool that you can use within a negotiation, but haggling is not a negotiation, right? Sometimes you get to a point where we're just down to a single issue and it's just about the money. Okay, now we're seeing what that is. But I think the major thing to keep in mind is that negotiation is multidimensional. Haggling is two-dimensional, right? It's just one-dimensional, right? We're just focusing on one issue, and then it's just a zero-sum type of thing. More for me means less for you and vice versa. But then when you think about negotiation, you're recognizing the holistic nature of the relationship. We're actually saying, all right, it's not just the price. We have time as a variable. We have the relationship as a variable. We have potential referrals as a variable, the length of the contract as a variable. And we can plug and play and mix and match with all of those variables to come up with a better deal, right? And then toward the end, maybe we get to a haggle, but we shouldn't start there.
And that's interesting because I'm thinking in that framework where it's a negotiation, but we're trading terms back and forth, almost like a legal or mediation, you know, thinking of those kind of examples, where someone says, I don't want to pay 10,000, I only want to pay 8. But if this goes well, I have some friends who would also want this, and I could refer you to them, right? And then I may make that decision that says, okay, I'll do it at 8, but if this goes well, and you're happy in the next month, then I want you to give me the names of 3 people that, you know, would be interested in as well.
Right. And for the lawyer in me says that needs to be written into the contract with clear if then, like what are those parameters, right? What is well, okay, these numbers, I hit that, then we do this. Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. And that's a way that we can create value, even if the value doesn't come from monetary terms.
And I think that's great. And one of the things for anybody watching or listening to this is one of the reasons why I say that negotiation, let's call it now haggling, is a sign, to me, it's honestly a sign of failing as a sales professional in that conversation. And sometimes you can't help it. Sometimes, no matter how good you are, it still happens where you don't get what you need. But if you're talking about price really early, then you're doing it incorrectly, because if you're selling something that has some kind of consultative decision-making process and you're talking about price right out the gate, then you don't even know what you're actually trying to help them with. And then it becomes a commodity. And then you've mostly just lost that battle. If you do the process correctly and you understand their pain or their goals, what they want, why they want what they want, and how you can help fulfill that, then when it comes to price, the price should be relative to the value. And before you even talk about price or terms or contract or effort and time, that should already have been solidified in their mind of the value of the ROI. When you get to the point that this is $10,000, that should be a no-brainer because of what you've done in advance of that moment in time where you've talked about price, where now price is just an edible. What is this going to cost me? Okay, sounds good. You know, let's go. Versus, no, that's too much. Because if they say that's too much, they don't understand the value and whatever that return is for them, which means you missed identifying it with them.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's funny because you're talking about haggling. And again, this is where salespeople think that that's their job, right? They got to do this haggle thing. That's this used car sales mode that people just get into, and this haggling thing. And in other countries around the world, haggling is just the expectation. If you don't haggle, you're doing it wrong, right? Like, you go to a bazaar in the Middle East and you don't haggle, they think you're an idiot, right? They're like, I'm just going to rip you off all day. Like, you're doing it wrong. You're actually offending them by not haggling. Versus in the US, like, that's just not something you do, but salespeople get in that mode. And it's funny because when I hear you talk about it and haggling and negotiation and trying to do this, I always think about how sales is like a doctor in the medical profession, right? And the doctor says, okay, you need surgery. I need to take care of, you know, you have a brain tumor and I need to do surgery. And somebody says, and then the doctor says, okay, this is going to be $80,000. Okay, can you do it for 40? Like, I want to, you know, can we do it for 40? How about this? Can we do it for 40 and I'll send you 5 referrals of other people who need brain surgery? Like, you're cracking up because it's just so ridiculous. You wouldn't do that. Salespeople put themselves into a different bucket where they don't see themselves as that level of professional, probably because there's no professional guiding body like there is in other professions. And so it's totally different. You wouldn't do, hey, I know you're going to fix my broken arm, but, you know, can I get a discount? Can we do 50%? It's the end of the quarter. So can I get it?
Right. Yeah, it does. It's not the same. And I'll tell you, Jason, I don't want any discount surgeries here.
No. And so that's what's wild for salespeople or sales leaders watching or listening to this is you also don't want your customers to think you are a discount, whatever it is that you do. And I'm not saying overcharge. I'm not saying it's worth 10, the cost is 10, and you're going to charge 20 because you can. I mean, you don't want people to think of you as a discount. That's where using discounts can be dangerous because it lowers the perceived value of something, right? It's right. The end of the quarter, so they're giving deals. It's like, okay, well, they're basically begging me for the business. So let's see if I like it or not, but I might not.
Exactly. And when we let's focus on perceived value for a little bit, because yeah. Perceived value is real. You know how they always talk about perception is reality? Perceived value is real. And they've done a number of studies. My background's in psychology, so I love talking about this stuff. So they did a study where they had a two bottles of wine, and they said this bottle of wine is $10 and then this bottle of wine is $200. Okay, which one do you like more? So they sample it, they taste it. I don't know. Well, you know, it has this effect on my palate, blah blah blah. It's certainly the $200 wine for sure, right? Same wine, exact same wine. But when you look at it through an fMRI scan, you're seeing more activity with the higher value wine, even though it's exactly the same in this experiment, because perception is reality. And you say, okay, well, maybe that's an outlier. They did the same thing with little kids and chicken nuggets. This is just no brand chicken nuggets. These are McDonald's chicken nuggets. Which do you like? They are the exact same ones. Kids say they like the McDonald's brand. It's the brand, right? And so we have to recognize that if we are lowering our perceived value, it is going to lower the perceived value of the quality of the service or product that we're selling.
I think that's so fascinating. And I love, like, for anybody catching this, listen to the podcast, because you bring that Negotiate Anything podcast. You bring a lot of that, which I think is fascinating. The psychology background, the legal background, your chess mastery, all of that stuff. But that is fascinating. You know, the perceived value. It's really about what somebody perceives as valuable and what they're willing to pay and how subjective that is for people and what matters to them, especially when you go side by side what people will, you know, think is valuable.
Exactly.
So where does that fit in, though, to the negotiation framework? So let's talk about the compassionate curiosity framework, or, you know, especially leading other people, not necessarily in the trenches selling, but like leading people. Where does that fit in? Where does that understanding of perceived value, does that play in anywhere to help in your process?
Yeah, for sure. It comes in when we're talking about setting boundaries, setting barriers, being assertive, and knowing our value. Because in any negotiation, one of the things you need to know is what your bottom line is. What are you willing to accept? And in our negotiation guides, if you go to our website, go to AmericanNegotiationInstitute.com/guide, you can get access to all of these different negotiation guides, sales negotiation guide, business negotiation guide, how to negotiate for your car, your salary. It's over 15 guides. In those guides, you'll see one of the parts is what's your bottom line? What's your walk away point? You need to understand that. You can still use the framework, right? But sometimes people are going to ask for things that you're not comfortable giving. And so you need to be very clear about what that boundary is, but still be respectful within the context of the conversation. Because for us, what we would do is we would say, unfortunately, that's not something I'm willing to do, but I'm still here trying to have this conversation with you. I think we could try to work something else out. And then we ask another question, stay in that mode of curiosity and see if you can solve a problem. Sometimes the worst deal you can get is a deal that you should have said no to, right? So it's okay to set those boundaries. And I think that's where knowing your value comes into play.
And so knowing the value helps with setting that boundary in the no, saying when you should walk away from a deal. Mm-hmm. Anything else on that? I feel like there's more there that could help somebody.
Definitely. I would refer to a book called The Power of a Positive No by William Ury. It gives you a way to say no in a way that actually builds the relationship. It's fascinating. And just for the sake of simplicity, I call it the no sound sandwich. So it's a really interesting approach. So it's a no sandwiched between two yeses. And so the first yes is the yes to the commitment, right? The reason we're saying no is because we're saying yes to something else, right? And then you say a very quick no, and then you say yes to the rest of the relationship and yes to the continuation of the negotiation. And this second yes is important because a lot of time people conflate rejection of the offer with rejection of themselves. And so you want to make sure that you're making it clear that, hey, no, I still value you as a person and I still value this negotiation. I'm still here trying to make it happen. So let's use a very, very simple example. So let's say somebody says, hey, Kwame, you want to do a podcast interview today at 11:49 a.m.? And I say, well, actually, I've already committed to hanging out with my friend Jason on his LinkedIn Live. So unfortunately, I have to say no. But listen, I love your show. I'd love to have an opportunity to come on your show. When's a good time for you? And so using that framework, it gives you a really smooth way to give a set of very clear boundary in a way that's still validating for the other person.
And when you use that example, which I think is great because that's why you're here and not there, is that, you know, you're saying you're identifying and saying yes to what you have already committed to and what is a priority in that moment or in that area, in that category. And then the no, which is no, I'm not going to or, you know, unable to. And then it's the other yes that you put in there, which is, but I still would like to. This is something I'd like to do. If that is true, right? Exactly. What happens if it's just a no? Like, yeah. What about that part?
Then what you say is like, listen, I appreciate it, but unfortunately, this isn't a good time. It's not going to work out. And the thing is, a lot of times people say, okay, well, sometimes I say no, and then people keep on pushing and pushing and pushing. I say, listen, if you've set a clear boundary and you've already given them a no sandwich, clearly they're still hungry, feed them another one, right? So you don't need to diversify the way that you say no. No is no, right? And I think a lot of people start to flounder because they say no, and then the person says, well, blah, blah, blah. They push a little bit, which is completely fine. And then they hear hesitation in the second no. And so for me as a negotiator, when I hear hesitation, I say, I hear some flexibility. I'm going to push, right?
Blood in the water, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And so I say, listen, you just have to have a very simple framework for how you set up those boundaries. And the thing is, the way that we interact with people is going to either communicate to them that it's not worthwhile continuing on this course of action, or it will embolden them, right? Sometimes we invite resistance by being too tepid with the way that we're saying no. And so by having a very simple and clear framework, it makes it more likely for your no to actually be respected by the other side.
And I'm thinking from the salesperson perspective is, you know, obviously you're taught to be persistent, right? If anyone can see it, I was doing a training this morning with one of my groups of one of my clients, and you can see persistence, which these are my sales success traits, right? Open, willing, curiosity, persistence, creativity, and then authenticity. Persistence is that key, right? So as a salesperson, you're just supposed to and you're expected. You know, they say no, just keep going and keep going. Which is interesting because sometimes the no that people are giving you is because they are just afraid and they've got their walls up. Maybe they want to say yes, but they're worried about saying yes and what that person's going to get from it or do to them, right? Think about, I want to buy a car. I want to say no, though, to the salesperson because, you know, I don't want to get taken advantage of, or I want to buy this thing and I want to say no, or I feel like I have to say no in order to negotiate a better deal. And then the salesperson thinks, okay, cool. That just means I got to keep pushing and keep persuading and keep on it to get my way. Which is a tough balance. I don't even know if there's a good answer or solution to that, which is, you know, when is a no in a sales or in a conversation? And then when is it not?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a great thing. And I mean, I'll answer like a lawyer, which is usually unsatisfying. And, it depends, man. It depends.
Classic.
So I think you can think about the relationship. Think about the closeness of the relationship. The closer the relationship, the more resistant to conflict it tends to be. And I shouldn't say resistant. I should say resilient. right? Okay. So I can push a little bit harder. I could get curious, ask questions, just because there's a little bit of trust between us. Hey, they're not going to take that personally. But you always have to remember too, we're not playing the short game, we're playing the long game. Because depending on how this interaction goes, let's say it is a true no, then maybe we could work with them later. And I remember one of the things that you said in the interview that was really powerful is that as a salesperson, what we're trying to do is we're trying to help them to make a good decision, right? Help them to make a good decision. The reality is we're not going to be the good decision for everybody. And so if you're going through this process and you say, actually, you know what? If this doesn't work for you, just feel free to say no. Okay. They say no. Well, fantastic. No, that helps me. So what are the biggest barriers that you're facing? You're still staying curious, right? What are the biggest barriers that you're facing? Because then you could say, hey, listen, I'm trying to help you to make a good decision. I might know another program that might work well for you. If you're really capped at $10,000 and I have a $25,000 program, then that's fine. I still have a lot of people in the industry who could benefit from you. Yeah, I have my friend Joe over here who sells his program for $7,000. It'll get you 70% of what you want, but not 100%, but it's better than nothing, right? But then down the road, as that business grows, then they remember you and how that approach went, right? And so going to your point of chess, I love chess. I think about every relationship as a never-ending game of chess. We're constantly positioning ourselves and we're asking ourselves, what move in this moment puts me in the best position for success? Sometimes it's not closing the deal right now. Sometimes it's closing the deal later. And so I always want to make sure that I'm focusing on the relationship and not pushing it to the point where it breaks.
Makes sense. In sales, you know, they'll say, you know, people will say there's three answers. You know, when you're wanting someone to buy, it's yes, no, or maybe, right? And so you want those. The yes is easy, right? Just grab the card. We're swiping the card. We're done, right? The no is actually a good one too, which is, okay, they don't want it, right? And you've done your job appropriately as a sales professional, but they don't want it. They say no. That's good to know as well. Move on. Help them in some way. Play the long game and move on. It's that maybe where the sales comes in, the persuasion and the conversation, which is like, okay, they're on the fence. And again, there's that delicate balance of where somebody says no, but they don't mean it. One of the things that I've always done is when somebody says no, or somebody says even the passive no, as I'll call it, which is the, this sounds interesting, send me more information.
Yeah.
Right. And a lot of people, if they're not careful in sales, they get excited. You know, I'll talk to somebody, a salesperson. I'm like, what happened with that call? Oh, they want me to email them more information. I'm super excited. I'm going to call them in a couple of weeks because they sounded interested. Did they sound interested or did they just give you the nice blow off? And what I'll do in my conversations, because I just want to bring it, you know, and be transparent and understand, is if somebody says that to me, hey, just send me more information, I'll say, I'm happy to send more information. I have a lot of information to send you. But just real quick before I do that, one of the things I know from doing this for so long is that sometimes people say they want more information or want me to email them because they actually want to say no, but they don't want to hurt my feelings because they like me and they just don't want confrontation or they don't want me to get overly pushy because if they say no, then I'm going to go into sales mode. And so sometimes people say, send me an email or send me more information, and they really don't mean it. They're really just trying to get rid of me. Is that the case here or is there more information you really want to make your decision? And sometimes people will say, no, I just really don't want it, but I you know, I didn't want to, you know, cause any conflict or confrontation. I'm like, I totally appreciate that. Sounds good. I'll send you an email in case you change your mind. Let them go, right? But not chase them, not be excited about them in my pipeline.
Exactly. Right? No, that's powerful. And people respect that. That's going to stand out to them, right? Because I think about the people who were pushy. I'm like, do I even want to work with you down the road?
No.
I remember I read one of Grant Cardone's books and I followed a couple of his videos and stuff. And I remember one time he said, somebody called him and was angry. And he said, listen, your salespeople keep calling me. They keep calling me. Tell them to stop calling me and leave me alone. And he's like, that ain't gonna happen, brother. That ain't gonna happen. I mean, unless you die. I was like, what? That is so obnoxious, but yeah. That was his style, and different salespeople have different styles. But I mean, for me, I know as a prospect, that would turn me off, and I would say, listen, even if I get to the point where I want that thing, I don't want it from you just out of spite, you know? So again, you have to think about the long game. Keep, you know, the relationship does matter.
And it's funny too, because I'm getting more emails and phone calls, because I'm getting on lists and people want to sell me stuff as a business owner, as a consultant. And I keep getting these emails that say, this is the third email I've sent. And if I don't hear back from you, I'm going to stop. And I just really want to reply to them and say, promise? Like, really? You promise? Because I'd love for you to stop. Like, if you didn't pick up the hints before. And of course, you know, you got to email 8 times and call 9 times before some. It's like, but who do you really want? What's going to be a good client for you versus meeting your numbers? But yeah, I mean, I think it's also, you know, interesting thing with the Grant Cardone model, which, you know, is usually pretty extreme and more on the aggressive, like follow up and sales side. But also, like, if you see someone who has a problem that you could solve and you know that you could, what's the right amount of follow up? What's the right amount of, like, just wanting to get them to make a different decision as for however long it's going to take? And or, you know, we're just wanting people to come to you. So I think that's always an interesting balance.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So we mentioned some things before. So obviously you're on LinkedIn, do a lot of stuff on there. It's great. You have the American Negotiation Institute, a lot of guides, like you said, /guide. There's a lot on there. You have your book, Finding Confidence in Conflict, How to Negotiate. We've got the podcast, Negotiate Anything. And then you have the legal side and the mediating side and the teaching side and all that stuff. Any new projects coming up? Anything interesting as we close out this fascinating, interesting 2020 and you're looking ahead to 2021?
Yeah. I have a book deal, which is exciting. I self-published the first deal, the first book, and now the second one I'm doing traditional publishing. It's called How to Have Difficult Conversations About Race. And so in 2020, I've been taking the conflict resolution material and optimizing it for those dialogues. So I just want to be where people tend to need me. Like in November, I did a course with LinkedIn called How to Talk About Politics, Difficult Conversations. Again, just taking these tools and putting them into a different realm. So that'll be an interesting foray into a slightly new area. But for me, you know, it's like I said, the best things in life are on the other side of difficult conversations. And I was recognizing in the marketplace that people were struggling with this conversation. So I wanted to help to make those easier.
Yeah. And earlier this year, especially when there was a lot of race conversations, a lot of things going on in the world and in the country, you did this webinar. Remember, it was so fun. I talk about it all the time where you did about having difficult conversations about race. Specifically, I think it was in the workplace, right? Mm-hmm. And it was funny because you did a Zoom with people on it. And I remember, like, stop counting at like 900 people tuned in. And I remember the funniest thing, and this is what I love the most. And I appreciate you and where you come at and your heart and what you do. But it was so funny to watch where you're like, all right, everybody, why don't you put in the chat where you're from? And 900 people. And it was just like, okay, my assistant will tell me if there's anything I need to talk about.
Yes, that was wild. That was a crazy one. Yeah. That lasted what, 3 hours long? That was exhausting, but that was the catalyst.
Yeah. And so much value. And I think that's important. And I love what you said just now about going to where people need you, going to the topics where people need you, instead of like, here's what I talk about. Here's negotiation that fits all these things. It's evergreen. I don't ever change. I'm going to do the same lecture at school as a professor year in and year out and not make it applicable versus like, okay, here's what matters now. Here's how to apply it, right? I'm not just selling you a hammer. I want to teach you how to use that hammer to build a new desk. Right? Because that's what you care about. You don't care about the hammer. You don't care about negotiation. You care about conflict in the workplace.
Exactly.
So, yeah. And Jacob just put in the chat, good stuff this morning. Thank you, Jen. So thanks, Jacob, for tuning in. Appreciate that. Any final thoughts, Kwame, as we finish out here?
Anything else? So I have a challenge for everybody. So again, the compassionate curiosity framework is acknowledge and validate emotions, get curious with compassion and joint problem solving. And I guarantee you, if you happen to interact with another human in the next 24 hours, you will have an opportunity to use this. So the challenge is to use it, see how it works, and then just keep on incorporating it and make it a part of your everyday conversations.
And if you need to look that up again, look up Kwame Christian Compassionate Curiosity. You can find it. You can find that framework. Obviously, lots of guides. Kwame, thanks again for joining me. Thanks for sharing these negotiation stuff for everything that you're doing. I appreciate you.
My pleasure. Thanks, my friend. Appreciate it.
All right. And for everyone else watching, I'll catch you on the next one. Next week is Christmas Eve. I have one scheduled. Not sure if I'm going to do it. I don't know who's going to be on LinkedIn or not, or on Facebook, YouTube, but we'll see. But that's it. I'll catch you on the next conversation about authentic persuasion.
Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode, and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.